Is this supposed to be like some royalty-free Godfather music?
Wow.
This is budget Godfather.
You think Quinn Hughes is just going to be walking around the Canucks room now and being like, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. I need to win tonight.
That's pretty good.
It would be pretty funny to see Quinn going around and doing that kind of a thing.
Yeah, put like cotton in his mouth on either side of his cheeks.
Man, I feel like I want to watch The Godfather now. What a movie.
Just such a long movie.
Yeah. But it's like really good.
No,
so.
It is. It's good. Every scene is so long, though.
It's like the greatest piece of cinema of all time, and you're like critiquing it because you're not used to that in the year 2024.
Yeah, it's like when he's fumbling the gun, it like takes like 15 minutes. It's like he's walking down the street for 10 minutes fumbling the gun before it falls
out.
Stop
it. Stop it.
Just kidding.
Unbelievable. Josh, please tell me you finally watched The Godfather.
Guys, I have not watched The Godfather.
No, of course not.
How have you... You have a list.
I know, but like I've got a backlog. And I'm watching shows right now, White Lotus. I'm trying to catch
you're
up.
You're watching
on that.
Like Hallmark movies, and you've still left The Godfather off your list.
I'm not watching Hallmark movies. Mm. Come on. It's White Lotus. It was Penguin.
How is White Lotus, by the way? Is it funny?
I'm like 4 episodes in.
Are you like hooked?
Yeah. Yes. Yes and no.
Yes and
like,
no.
I'm not as hooked as I've been on other shows, but yeah. I'm enjoying it and we'll finish it.
Have you guys watched Silo?
Yeah.
No.
So that's another show I've got to, like, I watched the first season, but now the second season's out, right?
Yeah, I'm up to date on the episodes. I watched episode 2 last night.
I've gotten in a couple of the shrinking episodes from season 2.
Shrinking? Oh, that's the TV one, right?
Yeah. Very good.
I have a real hard time with Roy Kent.
Roy Kent not being Roy Kent?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can't take it. Real hard time with Roy Kent not being Roy Kent.
It's like Joey Tribbiani, right? But you can never see him in anything else.
I cannot see you in any other role.
You're always Joey.
You are so perfect as Roy Kent. Stop this. I can't. This is not... No, you're still Roy Kent. I want you to be like...
He's got
to
like change his accent or something. Otherwise, I'm just going to be like, you got to speak gravelly right now. And
you're still like walking with your chest out and doing the Roy Kent thing. Please stop.
Yeah. Deck says, I recommend watching The Terminal List. I've watched that too. I think they're going to do a season 2, but...
Interesting. Never heard of that
one, pretty good.
Actually.
It's pretty good. It's with, what's his name? Chris Pratt.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Andrew Gordon. Not getting the reference, go back, listen to the first hour of the show, and then come back and listen to the mailbag. It's time for the mailbag on Canuck Central. If you were wondering also, by the way, like why we were making Quinn Hughes' The Godfather reference, it's because...
He is a godfather.
Yeah. Connor Garland did not name Quint Garland, their newborn baby boy, after Captain Quinn Hughes. It's named after Captain Quint in Jaws, which is Connor Garland's favorite movie, and then also mentioned, however, Quinn will be the godfather, and this in a piece at sportsnet.ca that's now available with Ian McIntyre. He'll be great to him. He'll be a big part of his life, and Quint will be a big part of his. He's one of my best friends. Quinn was great to me at times when I needed somebody, and that's why I picked him to be his godfather. You need somebody like that in your life. So Quinn and Connor, close. They're buds, and now forever tied, you would say, as Quinn is the godfather.
Forever buds.
Forever buds.
Forever buds.
Yeah. All right.
Start with the questions. Ed, heading to the first quarter mark of the season, what overall grade would you give the Canucks and why?
So, I'm going to go with a C minus.
C minus?
Mm-hmm.
C minus.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been all that good. I mean, for the most part,
so what
aside from Demko,
right?
Like, until recently, they had been healthy. What, they played 6 games without Besser?
Yeah.
You know. Miller has been here up until the Ranger game, so I'm grading most of this with Miller on the roster.
And he clearly wasn't right.
Yeah. I mean, they were good, but I expected more.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. C minus seems harsh, though, because I mean,
they've had an incredibly soft schedule.
I get it, but 21.
The process has not been good. Like, what do we love about the Canucks aside from like Quinn Hughes is off the charts good?
Well, I mean, he's pretty good. I don't think the process is as bad as you're making out to be. Mm. It's not. Like, it's not okay. Been good, but it's not that bad.
Maybe I mean, I'm a harsh grader. I don't know.
I mean, so what would you give them if they were 500, an F?
No, it'd probably still be about the same. What are they? How do you, two games above 500 right now?
Yeah, 21-18. Well, I mean, they just have to lose three in a row to be 500.
Yeah.
That's pretty significant.
Okay.
I'm not trying to give them a big grade. I'm like giving them a C or like a C. C? C is kind of where I'm at. I just think C minus is a little.
Man, you're giving me crap for a C minus, and you're grading them at a C.
Yeah,
you're like 5%.
This is unbelievable.
Higher.
Well, yeah, because C's so okay. C was like 60% and above. It's like under 60%. Mm. You know, you could talk me into like a C plus, but okay. I don't know. That's maybe a little too kind. C minus just seems harsh.
I mean,
like C plus maybe.
They're barely a wild card team right now.
Well, I mean, point percentage wise, they are.
Yeah. Canucks could have been better.
Yes.
Through the first number of weeks. I know the record is good, but I've said this before. The record is a product of the soft schedule the Canucks have had so far this season.
We still have to get the points. Paul in Coquitlam says, this is British Columbia. You can't give letter grades. It has to be either extending, proficient, or emerging. Or something like that. Are they emerging?
In school now, it's there's no letter grades anymore.
This is crazy to me.
Yeah.
I'm sure grade 11 and 12, you probably do. No?
I don't think so.
You get percentage? How do you get into university?
I think it's just like, you still have a percentage.
Well, yeah.
Is this like youth sports not picking a winner? Or like you're not keeping score in a minor league hockey game kind of thing?
This is the biggest nonsense ever. They don't have letter grades, but they keep the percentage.
The percentage tells you
what the letter grade would be anyways.
I would assume so. Like my siblings are all in like kind of middle school, high school age.
Right.
They're not grade 11 or 12 yet, so maybe it does change when they get there, but I'm pretty sure it's all, there's no letter grades anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't tell you the percentage. I don't know. Mm. I feel like it would be necessary.
So, okay, let's change the question then. Do the Canucks get a sticker for their first...
sticker? No stickers.
Through the first 18 games of the season, do the Canucks get a sticker or no sticker?
No. I mean, it's a passing grade, I think we agree.
Yeah.
Next one comes from Canucks fan. Is the Canucks schedule a help or a hindrance? Feels like too many days off.
Oh, it's been a help.
Oh, definitely a help. You're not going to love when the Canucks schedule ramps up and gets a little crazy. They're playing six games in the next 11 nights, going through a bunch of cities. You know, I think the Canucks have actually done, since Jim Rutherford has come and become the president of hockey ops, they've done a really good job of setting this team up for success with how the schedule is laid out. Like, you're always going to have points of the season where it is not ideal, not optimal. It's just the product of trying to fit 82 games in to the condensed schedule. And the Canucks had that after the All-Star break last year. They played a ton of games. It was like ridiculous how many games they were playing, more than every other night. That's going to happen eventually here for the team. Like right now, I think starting with that Thursday game a couple of weeks ago, they were going through 14 games and 29 nights, and they're in the midst of that right now. So it's not an easy point of the schedule, but you're seeing it with back-to-backs next week, six games and 11 nights. The schedule, it's needed to have a helpful schedule early on in the season. This front office seems to know that, and they've set the team up to at least give them a chance at early season success. And even though the Canucks haven't played well, they're still three games above 500, as my co-host likes to remind me.
By the way, the text line saying that letter grades start again at grade 10.
Okay, I thought so. It makes no sense, that percentage in that letter grades.
Next question comes from Mike. There's been a lot of speculation as to who the Canucks will trade for, but who do you, Dan and Sat, think would be the best fit and how much would it cost to acquire them?
So said best fit, not most realistic fit, right?
Yeah, best fit.
To me, it's Mike Matheson.
Yeah.
Or like Rasmus Anderson. Maybe Rasmus Anderson, actually.
Matheson or Anderson are the first two names that come to mind. For as much as like I'd be intrigued by somebody like Juracek.
He's a project, man.
It would be a project play.
Yeah.
So
he might be good, but I mean, are you banking on him? You're trying to figure him out first and see what he is.
Like his best bet, if he gets moved, like maybe go to a team that's not so good and you get to like...
Honestly, he needs to
figure it out at the NHL level, or, you know, if you trade for him and you lay out a plan with him and his agent, like, hey, we want to work with you. Here's what we've done with some other guys at our AHL level and develop them. You know, you really got to, and I think the Canucks have done a really good job with a lot of their prospects, you know, laying out a plan for their prospects, explaining how they hope to develop them. You know, that's probably what Juracek needs more than anything right now, but it seems like there's sort of a break in trust between him and the Columbus Blue Jackets right now. But it's more of a project. Like, if you're acquiring something for this year, does Juracek help you?
I mean, he could help you, but he's not putting you over the top.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's going to be a difference maker. It's just he has to learn how to play in the NHL first, let alone be a difference maker in the NHL. And that's going to take some time. I think those are the two as far as on the trade market. If you're throwing out somebody else... like, I do wonder about a guy like Damon Severson.
Okay. That's an interesting one. That's a big contract to acquire.
It's $6 million. It's not cheap. Yeah. If you're considering bringing Zadorov back, I think Severson's a better player.
Yep.
For instance. I don't know how realistic that would be, but if that's kind of what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And the cost to acquire Matheson would be ridiculous. Same thing for Rasmus Anderson. You're not getting them without trading one of your top two prospects because they have a year left on their contract. Maybe all they get is a first-round pick, but I don't think those teams are giving those guys up right now for first and a second type deal. They would wait another year before doing that.
Yeah. And with the way, prospects are a little bit of fool's gold, but you know, Willander is progressing well. You know, how do you manage this short-term need with what you have coming within the organization is a big question for this club as well, especially with the limited amount of realistic trade targets that are seemingly available at this moment in time.
Next one comes from Prison Mike. Does it make sense to make a trade before having a healthy lineup to see if the Canucks are even in contention this year? How long can they wait until it's too late? The Canucks are lucky the whole Pacific is struggling, but that likely won't be the case forever. Also kind of goes with a question from Taj. Are the Canucks more willing to be patient and toll cap space for the deadline instead of making a trade now because the division is so mid?
So, I mean, like I mentioned earlier this week, I think the Canucks would prefer to wait as long as possible before making trades because they would accrue more cap space. So I think in a perfect world, they want to get closer to the deadline or at least into the new year, toll some more cap space, and then be able to make a bigger, more significant addition. Two things could get in that way. One is a player you really like become available earlier and you have to act fast.
Yep.
And the second is you feel like your season is slipping away and the time to make a move is now. I don't get the sense that this team is going to make a big move out of desperation. If they make a big move, it's because they see the fit not just this year, but beyond this year.
Yeah.
And that's why we're making this move. And maybe it helps us this year, but we're not making it out of desperation. Could they make a minor move? I could see that as well. But to me, that's kind of like a patchwork. I see Keith, the water guy, texting in Cody Ceci. Like, yeah, sure. Ceci could come in and probably give you more than either Desharnais or Juulsen on the third pair, but that's pretty much all you're getting. You're really not upgrading your blue line significantly. You're upgrading around the edges a little bit. You can do something along. Like even Marcus Pettersson, I don't think it really upgrades you massively, especially with how Brännström's played on the left side. He gives you better defensive play, but I think overall value is not going to be significantly higher.
Ultimately, your best bet is to hope you get most of the guys that are out healthy. You get some semblance of the team you hoped to ice in the summer together. It never really works out that way, as we know, with how injuries go. But get as many of the guys that you can back into the lineup, and hopefully this team treads water until then, because there isn't an option out there right now. There isn't anybody that's out there and available. And by the way, if you're buying that player now, you're going to have to overpay a little bit to make the team trade that player now versus later on in the season. I don't see the player out there that makes a big difference to this team right now. So my feeling on it is ride it out as long as you can. Hopefully Soucy and Meyer start playing a little bit better and more consistently. And then you get a better idea of just how good this team actually is before you become willing to spend a big-time asset to see if you can put a team over the top.
Yeah, I get that. But I don't get the sense that they're going to be making moves to just put themselves over the top for this year. Like, I really don't get the sense that they're going to just be big buyers for rentals for the sake of it.
Yeah.
You know, but I do think that if they make a move now, like I mentioned earlier this week too, it's money in, money out.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it that way. So if Zadorov is an option right now, it would have to be money in, money out. It's hard to kind of come up with the numbers, right? Because we talk about, okay, sure, you can move Desharnais. That's $2 million. You want to add Forbert to get, okay, that's $3.5 million. You have to replace one of them on the roster. You're getting closer if you do those two, but you're not quite there as far as filling the salary. And are you getting a player right now and all you're giving up is, say, Desharnais and just scraps? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, so I just don't know if what fans want is realistic, and I think the patient approach will win out as long as they pick up some points here. And someone is asking, is Jake Walman an option? Could be an option. I do think if they're going after a guy like that who's very down the list and is cheaper, I don't think they're very willing to give up much, and especially not for somebody who has another contract for next year beyond this.
Yeah.
On that end, I think if they're adding somebody who has money beyond next season, it would have to be somebody that they feel very confident in. And that's one of the reasons why they didn't go after Liljegren that hard.
Yeah.
Like, I think if he was on a 1-year deal, they may have been more willing to look at it. I don't think they're comfortable adding $3 million to somebody that they're not sure can play beyond their third pair next year.
Even somebody like Will Borgen, if Seattle gets to the deadline, they're like, we're not really in it. And they decide to trade a Will Borgen. Guess what? Like, he's probably going to be worth at least a second-round pick.
You probably can get him for second and another later pick, or a second and a prospect. That's what I think Borgen's value is going to be at the deadline.
And then maybe, like, you can sign him to a reasonable deal if you were to acquire him and expect him to help you bridge the gap to Willander and give Willander some time to develop. Like, that kind of a player makes sense to me, but, you know, it's...
He's had his struggles, though, and he's only playing 15 minutes a game, too, right?
It's still an imperfect player. Still a situation where I'm sure Seattle's not ready to make that move. So you're kind of at a standstill. And why patience is the key here for the Canucks, they just have to play a lot better.
Next one, Glenn in Lynn Valley. Is it time to revisit the idea of bringing Nikita Trampkin?
Oh, come on.
Oh, God, stop it. No.
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 Trampkin can barely play in Russia. Come on.
Stop it. It's not a real question, right?
I don't think so.
That's a sarcastic...
So. You would hope so.
I mean, the guy's 30 years old.
It's like, yeah.
He's got his best years ahead of him.
Bring a double swoop for Goldobin and Triamkin. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Fix some of your scoring issues.
What's Alex Burmistrov up to?
Oh, Burmistrov.
At least he had some success in the NHL.
I mean, he did have a Besant Motors deal, so... Yeah. Counts for something.
I think he scored 30 goals 1 year, or 20 goals 1 year, or something like that. He had a decent year at one point. I don't know about 20 goals, but I mean, he's a guy that actually had some games. Yeah, 13 1 year.
Mm. You know? So exciting.
He played went from 30 to 13.
No, I said 20. I meant 20. Is it 30? But like, he played 348 games at least and had 37 goals. Trampkin played like what? 40 NHL, 77 NHL.
Goldobin dangled Drew Doughty one time.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Memories.
Memory. Okay.
Next one from Sean. Assuming the Canucks have an opportunity to see Demko's form, will this road trip's performance determine whether they are punting or buying? So we got a few texts like this, or questions, being like, is this road trip make or break on what the Canucks do at the deadline?
Okay.
No.
So even if they lose all six games, and I don't think they will, but let's say they lose all six games on a road trip, right? The Canucks will have 21 points in 24 games.
Yeah.
Which puts them three games under 500.
That would be, in totality, an 8-game losing streak.
Right.
Tough to overcome.
It would be tough to overcome, but I don't think that sinks your season. Like, no. 3 games under .500 at the 24-game mark does not mean your season is over. And that is the absolute worst case, like losing all 6 games, right? Yeah. And even then, I don't think your season is necessarily over. It puts you in a tough spot, but it's not like you're talking about being 8 points under .500, right? That you're talking about just being 3 behind. I think you can bridge that gap pretty quickly, and if you get going again. But, yeah, I think we've got to just chill on the season is over after this road trip. It's way too early still.
It's, look, it's still too early. Canucks are still in a decent spot. I would say, though, wasn't the Flyers a couple of years ago that lost 10 in a row, were the first team to lose 10 in a row in a season and still make the playoffs?
Yeah. Well, again, like...
The Fire Haxtell year? Yeah. I mean, this is like going deep into the annals of history, it feels like, even though it was only 6 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it's hard to overcome that kind of a losing streak in a season. Hello, Captain Obvious. Not a lot of teams lose 8 to 10 games in a row and are good enough to make the playoffs. The reason they lose that many games in a row is because they're not good enough to make the playoffs. But this team isn't going to lose 6 games in a row. So we're way too early in the season for the Canucks for that, even that question to be...
Well, especially, okay, if the Canucks were fully
healthy... To me, the
question
is just not... we're not ready for that question at this point in the season.
If the Canucks were fully healthy... And then they lost all 6 games.
Yeah.
You'd be a bit worried about, okay, what is going on with this team? But they are going to get healthier. I think guys are going to come back, and we'll see them, you know, play better than they have so far. Now, obviously things can go sideways, but it's way too early to write a season off after a 6-game road trip.
Even at the end of the road trip, you're still going to have 70% of the schedule still to play. So, long way to go.
Next one from Jeffro. Is the Canucks' best chance to win a Stanley Cup right now, or is it a few years ahead of them? With all the Abbotsford players coming to start the year, along with Willander down the road.
For me, the Canucks' best opportunity is while Quinn Hughes is signed for the number he is currently signed at.
Biggest bargain?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to win a cup, chances are you're going to do it building around Quinn Hughes at less than $8 million per.
Yeah, so the next 2 years? Yeah. Probably. I mean, your window probably is the next 2 years. Again, this year, I'm not quite sure. I think coming into the season, the Canucks, you know, I didn't think they were a tier one contender, but they're beyond. After that, they're in that next tier of teams that can go on a run, right? They could pull it off, but they'd need to show that they can do that. And so far this year, we haven't seen any indications of them being a top tier team yet, right? Whether it's health or form, we haven't seen it yet. But the next couple of years is probably your best bet, yeah.
Yeah. The contract Quinn is on. That's the window. Even though you have the Oliver Ekman-Larsson penalty, the window is still right now.
Next one from Basketball Phil. What athlete is giving or has given Father Time the biggest battle? Tom Brady, LeBron James, Alex Ovechkin until Dan Riccio cursed him, Novak Djokovic, Serena Williams, Nolan Ryan, or someone else?
Man, it feels like LeBron is very much in this conversation. Serena Williams, I mean, she's the greatest tennis player of all time and was still doing her thing up until a few years ago through pregnancies and all that. So it's kind of crazy what she's been able to do, but... her last slam win wasn't, we're going back now. It was what 2017 or something like that. So
yeah,
it's been a while for Serena. It's probably recency bias and I'm not thinking clearly on every other option on that list, but I do want to say LeBron, and I'm going to go with LeBron.
I think it's Tom Brady.
I would agree with Brady. I mean, winning a Super Bowl into his 40s.
Yeah, like 44 years old and won a Super Bowl. LeBron wins a chip at 44,
like,
sure.
Yeah, Brady wasn't a top, say, 2 or 3 quarterback, but he was a top 5 quarterback.
Yeah.
Is LeBron a top 5 player?
How old
in the
was
NBA?
Manning when he won with the Broncos?
He was terrible when he won them with the Broncos, but yeah, he was older.
He was terrible in the final.
He was terrible in the playoffs. That was the worst playoff performance by any quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Like, he wasn't good, but in the Super Bowl, he didn't make a mistake, but he was not good. They won because of their defense.
Yeah. Brock Osweiler.
Yeah,
Brock Osweiler. Like, played some games.
Yeah, I believe he was 38 or 39.
I think we have to put...
Brady, I guess Brady's achievement is underappreciated by me.
Yeah, I think Brady, and I think we have to give some credit to a couple of tennis players, Rafael Nadal and even Djokovic. Not as quite as old, 37, but 38. We're talking about like guys who until Nadal retired into their late 30s winning. This was not happening in tennis, considering how athletic that sport is, how hard it is for you to win into in your 30s, let alone in your late 30s. I think those guys deserve some recognition, especially Novak.
And shout out to Jack Nicklaus, winning a Masters at 46 or whatever it was.
Yeah. And this one says Nolan Ryan.
Yeah. Nolan Ryan was good.
That was a good one, too. Matt from Kelowna, Gordie Howe.
Yeah.
Gordie played into his
50s.
50. Played late, right. But like how.
It was like WHA. He was like playing with his two kids. I don't know. I don't have enough intel to decide if Gordie gave Father Time the biggest fight of all time.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. He was like 43 years old when he put up like 103 points at 41 or whatever. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Gordie
was nuts.
Next one from Dom. What's wrong with wearing white sneakers for any occasion?
Oh,
see, okay. I knew Dom was going to ask this question. But I have seen Dom.
Dom is out of control lately.
Yeah, Dom is irrational confidence guy, right?
Yes. Like,
it's whoa, just, yeah, you know. Yeah, that's Dom, not me.
Well, you,
it's you with certain things.
Yeah.
Athletic achievements.
Me with athletic feats.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have no issues with you wearing white sneakers. Again, I think there is a time and place for everything. And I think if you are wearing white sneakers to a formal event, you have to wear a suit. Like, it has to be like, you have to be stylish. You have to put it together. I think if you are, again, the mayor of the city and you are at a Remembrance Day, you know, gathering and you're laying a wreath, you probably shouldn't be wearing white sneakers and jeans.
You should also have someone on your staff that's like, hey, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. So I think time and place. Now, if he was wearing a suit, and again, I would say, hey, does it fit the occasion, trying to be stylish for that type of event? But hey, that's who you are. That's how you dress. And it's at least formal and pays respect. I think in certain moments, you have to pay respect. Like if you go to a funeral, you're going to show up in jeans and just blue sneakers. Like probably not respectful, right?
Mm-hmm. Am
I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
That's why they make different color shoes.
Yeah, that's it.
And for different occasions.
You guys know me. I show up to work half the time in like sweatpants and like a hoodie.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not trying to say you can't be comfortable and casual. I have a lot of shoes. I have like four different white sneakers.
But if you're on the panel.
I'm not wearing white sneakers. Now, in the panel, nobody sees your shoes, number one. You probably could pull it off because you're doing a suit combo, whatever, right? But again, time and place. And I don't know why I have to explain this to people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the mayor.
Next one.
Can I shout out Yarmer Yager as far as giving Father Time a good run?
True, yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm with this one. Justin and East Van. If a song starts playing every time you walk into a room, which song would you choose as your personal anthem?
My personal anthem. Oh, man. My personal anthem. This is a very hard question.
Yeah, I probably should have.
This is like really deep.
What song for personal anthem?
Yeah. Like if you were to walk into a room and the same song plays over and over again every time you walk into that room.
Oh my gosh.
For me, it would probably be something from Pearl Jam.
Probably. Eddie Vedder mumbling in the background.
Deep cut on State of Love and Trust. I don't know. I love the way that song breaks in. It feels like a wrestling song.
I don't even know. I don't even know if I can nail down one song.
You don't think so?
I don't even know. No, I'm not even sure I can.
Think about it and break.
This would feel like if, you know, what would be your batting theme every time you're going up to bat? You know? Or you're walking down the ramp at Monday Night Raw. You know? What would you want your song to be?
Mine is definitely Jumped Into the Fire by Harry Nilsson. If you guys remember that song?
Do not.
Yeah, that's a made-up song.
No, it's funny. Okay, do you guys remember Goodfellas?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, remember the
dun-dun-dun-dun-dun? Okay, yeah.
That song.
Oh, okay. I got to think about this.
Goodfellas.
This is like a
great movie.
Yeah, really good movie.
I've seen that one.
Very good. I have some good suggestions coming in. People say When the Levee Breaks, that's a good one.
Bartolo Colon, he gave Father Time a good run. Big Sexy.
Yeah.
I mean, he did. Didn't he hit a home run at like 43 or something?
Yeah. That was
God, crazy. That was legendary watching him trot around the bases.
San Diego, I think.
Yeah.
San Diego.
You know what that... No, I'm not
going to go
there.
Don't even go there.
All right. Some mailbag overflow coming up as we get you ready for the Canucks and Ottawa Senators. Next, final segment of Canuck Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.